Director of Knowledge, distinguished panelists, ladies and gentlemen, I have to add to my CV that I'm also a scientist. I worked as a neuroscientist here in the Semmelweis University, and I did my research work on the structure of the spinal cord. Now, but my task is now to speak about our chairman said, about the history of UNESCO, and it's a great pleasure for me to do this. And this is the motto of my presentation. I think you know all this very well. And then, so the title is UNESCO, When, How, Why the S, the UNESCO, came into the name, and what are the consequences of this? Now, this year in 2015, the whole world, in each of the 195 member states of UNESCO, people are celebrating the 70th anniversary of the foundation of the UNESCO. On the final day of the UN conference for the establishment of an educational and cultural organization, only educational and cultural, held in London, from 1st to 16 November 1945, representatives of 37 member states signed the Constitution of the Educational, Science, and Cultural Organizations. The nuclear attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki occurred after the preparatory San Francisco conference, but before the London conference. Quote, Hiroshima had made governments more aware of the social and political implications of science. One can read in one of the references I studied, 60 Years of UNESCO, published in 2006. I'm quite sure it's known for you. Now, the above sentences answer the first question of the title of my presentation, When? The S was added to the name and the content of the new organization close to the last moment on the sixth day of the London conference. The UNECO, as planned in the three previous years, became UNESCO in the London conference. The answer to the how is somewhat longer. Horrified by the ravages and miseries of the Second World War, the Conference of Allied Ministers of Education and representatives of the governments in exile in London, as a preparation for the post-war period, worked for years on the formation of an international organization for the maintenance of peace and for preventing the war through education. To achieve these aims, the conference planned to use the weaponries of education and culture. Another preparatory conference in the US in San Francisco suggested to include also the science to the activity of the organization without changing the name, UNECO. The US delegation explained that, quote, for the American public, the word culture covered science. In the same time, Joseph Needham, a biochemist at Cambridge University traveling around the world, try to convince organizations and individuals for the creation of an organization for the international cooperation in science in the post-war period. Now, on the London conference, Allen Wilkinson, British Minister of Education and President of the conference, 1945, announced in a plenary session that also science was not part of the original title of the organization. The British would put forward a proposal for it to be included. In these days, said Wilkinson, when we are all wondering, perhaps apprehensively, what scientists will do to us next, it is important that they should be linked closely with the humanities and should feel that they have a responsibility to mankind for the results of their labor. This is already an answer to the why. And let me quote another answer to the why. When the war ended, it's a quotation, with mushroom clouds over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it was blindingly obvious that scientific development would play a critical role in the future of nations. Scientists had played an essential role in the war effort. Now, many hope to do the same for keeping the peace. Science was understood to be neutral, while at the same time promoting progress. For many scientists, international cooperation represented a means not only for continuing their anti-fascist commitment, but also preventing the destructive use of science in the post-war era, unquote. Now let's see the consequences. Largely due to these last-minute changes, the biologist Julian Huxley, replacing the classicist Alfred Zimmer, was appointed executive secretary of the UNESCO Preparatory Commission. Eventually, 1 year later, on December 6, 1946, in Paris, on the first general conference, he was elected the first director general of UNESCO. Still in London, Huxley recruited members of his staff, among them Joseph Needham. Eminent both as biologist and historian of science, said Huxley, Needham became later the head of UNESCO's Natural Science Department. As the secretary of the Preparatory Commission, Huxley took a fortnight off to write a pamphlet entitled UNESCO, Its Purpose and Its Philosophy, with the aim to clarify his thinking and, he hoped, that of the delegates in the forthcoming first general conference. The pamphlet was received by the delegates with mixed feelings. As it turned out, quoting Huxley, attitude which I adopted in this pamphlet led various delegates quite erroneously to think that I was anti-religious. While my liberal views were taken by others as communist, wrote Huxley later. In the March 1976 issue of the UNESCO Courier, remembering the 30th anniversary of the foundation of the organization, an editorial quotes selections from the pamphlet with the introduction, quote, below we publish salient passages from Huxley's philosophy, which has remained virtually unknown for the past 30 years. At the very beginning of the pamphlet, Huxley specified the basic requirement of the correct operation of the UNESCO. Quote, but in order to carry out its work, an organization such as UNESCO needs not only a set of general aims and objects for itself, but also a working philosophy, a working hypothesis concerning human existence and its aims and objects, which will dictate or at least indicate a definite line of approach to its problems. Without such a general outlook and line of approach, UNESCO will be a danger of undertaking piecemeal and even self-contradictory actions, and will in any case lack the guidance and inspiration which spring from a belief in a body of general principles. The science for Huxley was not only mathematics and natural sciences, but covered all the primarily intellectual activities of man, the whole range of knowledge and learning, natural sciences, social sciences, humanities. One can read elsewhere in a succinct opinion about Huxley's leadership style. He succeeded in bringing a very passionate, optimistic, warm, and friendly atmosphere to the UNESCO Secretariat. In the same document, the activity of Huxley and his staff in concreto was appreciated like this. I'm quoting, Huxley developed original ideas, and during his time at the top of UNESCO, he promoted the creation of international scientific institutes devoted to the Antarctic, to arid zones, the Amazon forest, the humid zones, oceanography, and microbes. These activities were later judged absolutely visionary for their time. Kochiro Machura, to whom I the motto took, Director General of UNESCO praises the visionary thinking of Huxley-led organization with the following sentence: UNESCO has also been at the forefront of scientific trends. For example, before the world gave a name to ecology and the environment, one of the organization's first large-scale science project was in the Amazon in the rainforest. Now, Huxley remembered his 2.5 years in office in the following way, quoting, "Naturally, the scope of UNESCO's activities has been much enlarged and often redefined in slightly different terms." The quotation is from 1970. "I can truthfully say that my 2.5 years at UNESCO were the high point of my life, a time when all my capacities and all my knowledge and energies were fully involved. I fervently hope and indeed confidently expect that UNESCO will continue along the same general lines as a promoter of cultural advance and mutual understanding, but always on the lookout for new problems and new ways of tackling them." Now, Huxley's closest associate, Joseph Needham, biochemist from Cambridge, in his report to UNESCO's Preparatory Commission in July 1946, defined the aims of the natural sciences section. So again, a quotation, "UNESCO is an agency for peace through active international cooperation. In the field of scientific cooperation and service, we have one of the immediately effective means of accomplishing this. This is partly because scientific research is essentially and traditionally international and cooperative, and also because the applications of scientific knowledge to human welfare, if properly made, can be one of the most effective methods of removing some of the causes of war." Julian Huxley was elected as a foreign member of the Hungarian Academy of Sciences, where we are now. In his rank, he met Zoltán Kodály in the middle, the president at that time of the Hungarian Academy of Sciences. He is a composer, we are very proud of him, and gave lectures in the headquarters of the Academy on July 18, 1948. Now, from the decoration of this building, we may find the room where this discussion was taking place. In the audience for this lecture sat the stars of the Hungarian cultural, intellectual, literary, and musical elite. As you can read in the diary of the writer Gyula Iyes, a well-known Hungarian writer, Huxley spoke about collaboration between nations. Nations should know each other for the preservation of the peace. One should list the obligations of the literature, science, and especially natural sciences to make the concept of peace worldwide accepted. And for closing, I am convinced that the reopening and careful reading of Huxley's pamphlet could help to clarify and redefine the 21st century purposes and philosophy of the UNESCO. Thank you very much.